And I'll call the meeting to order, and I'm going to turn to Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher.
Thank you. Thank you very much, President Guskowitz, and good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the start of the new academic year here at MSU. Today's agenda is filled with several significant action items of university business. There are also several speakers, including those who have come for public participation. Just as sort of a framework up front, in the event of a disruption that sort of prevents the board from conducting business or the members of the public from hearing or observing, the meeting will be recessed or adjourned. If the meeting is recessed, the board will meet via Zoom within 10 minutes of the recess occurring, and regrettably there will be no opportunity for public comment at that stage. So, President Guskowitz, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, and we'll approve the agenda. Is there a motion to approve? Second, thank you. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Now the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion?
So moved.
And these are the minutes from June 28, 2024. Second?
Support.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The minutes are approved. Okay. So we will go on to the President's report. And it's my pleasure to welcome everyone back to a new academic year. And I'd like to say that our campus is best filled when we have our 51,000 curious, engaged students back on campus. I have said over the past few months it was a little lonely on campus this summer in the absence of our students. And so it was great to welcome so many of them and their families back to campus on move-in. I'd like to say move-in day, but it was about a move-in week. And I had the chance to spend some time with Provost Yitzko and Senior Vice President Gore out in some of the residence halls welcoming students and parents back to campus. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank our staff in our residence halls. And so much work has gone into welcoming back our students. They've worked tirelessly over the summer months to settle in some 17,000 students into our residence halls. I have... heard that we most likely house more students in our residence halls than any other university across the country, with 17,000 residing in our residence halls. So that whole process was very well organized and just a job well done. And so I want to thank all those who worked tirelessly to allow for that to happen. We then kicked off fall welcome with an upbeat and inspiring incoming student convocation over at Breslin, and it was very satisfying to induct more than 11,000 first-year and transfer students into the Spartan community. And so I want to again thank everyone who participated and contributed to the convocation. And then following that, I spent a lot of time out on Munn Field and over in Munn Arena and over in IM West with events for our Spartan games that followed, and then likewise all of those who helped produce the Spartan spectacular events and represented their student organizations at Sparticipation the following Sunday. It was a warm afternoon out there, but we had over 700 tables representing most of our 1,000-plus organizations and clubs. And it was a great way to help students find their place in our community and learn about the resources that we provide to support their success. All of us are working very hard to let our students know that they are welcome here, that they have been admitted to one of the greatest public universities in the nation. They've earned their way here. They belong here at Michigan State. Together, we're all part of something big and something wonderful. And speaking of being part of a big community, it'll be probably still a few weeks away from our official enrollment numbers for this fall. But our preliminary estimates look very good at this point, and we're looking at a big, diverse group of students this year. And of the more than 11,000 first-year and transfer students that I mentioned, about 8,000 of them come from Michigan. And that, again, tells us that we're the top choice for students from this state, which is why you will continue to hear me say that we are Michigan's state university. And we're proud of that. From my listening and learning tour, which eventually ended this summer, I spent about 3.5-4 months since arriving on March the 4th. I know in learning from those that I've had the chance to meet that our students are joining a community that shares strong bonds, as I like to say, and we have a strong culture of collaboration here, and I'm excited about moving our university forward together as one team, and you will hear me talk often about one team. That means our faculty, our students, our incredible staff and dedicated staff and employees that make this place operate on a daily basis. It's our board of trustees that I sit beside today, and we are one team. I love this culture of collaboration that exists here. And on that note, I do want to take the opportunity to thank our board of trustees for their ongoing commitment to good leadership practices, as they pledged to do when I accepted this position back last December, adopting governing principles, completing their professional development with the Association of Governing Boards and of Universities and Colleges, and developing several governing principles, which we have talked about in several meetings over the past few months. And so I'm grateful for the trusted partnership that that we have forged together in service to the university, and I'm very optimistic for our future. As all Spartans work collectively to strengthen our community, we know our strong ties can be tested in today's often contentious atmosphere. And that's why last month I sent an email message to the greater Spartan community and wrote an op-ed in the Lansing State Journal about how we all have a role to play in building a more inclusive community. The foundation, I believe, is engaging in civil discourse across differences. I believe Michigan State University is a place that where we can model that, where we can lead, and I'm committed to that and partnering with you to ensure that we do that. We won't always agree. And that's okay. Debate is part of our educational experience, and it helps us see that there are many ways to live and view the world. When we bring a diverse community of students, faculty, staff together, it allows those different lived experiences to bring the curriculum to life, to allow us to become curious about how we can not only solve the grand challenges of our time, but identify the grand challenges of the future. And together, I know that we can do this. But what I'm asking is that we demonstrate empathy and intellectual humility, and I wrote about this summer as we began to communicate out to the community very early. That includes listening actively, responding thoughtfully, and arguing respectfully. And it involves understanding that disagreement not equate to disrespect. And I strive to live by these, to live by example, and for us to model this, as does, I know, our leadership team. And I've spent the summer continuing to meet with faculty, staff, and student groups to engage in dialogue, to better understand one another and find ways to build a strong campus culture together. And I'm counting on everyone here to help us do that together. Finally, when our inclusive collaborative culture is tested, we will stand up for it and reaffirm our values, as we had to do earlier this week in a campus community email following incidents that occurred on our campus last weekend that we were very disappointed by. Every Spartan is a unique and valued member of our community, representing different cultures and backgrounds, and the university is stronger for it. And we will not tolerate discrimination or harassment of any type on our campus, and we want to know about it when you see it happening. As our university works to provide avenues for civil expression and activity, I'd like to highlight a robust and nonpartisan effort around voting. Thank you to the dedicated team at MSU Vote for working with area clerk's offices to build awareness of the upcoming general election. You might have heard there's an election coming up. And to promote student registration and turnout, which is a citizen's most fundamental obligation to the democracy that serves us. And again, our goal is that we, again, model this such that our graduates can go out and to be active participants in a thriving democracy, and it can begin right here at Michigan State University. We want to promote student registration and turnout, which is, a citizen's most fundamental obligation. I'm also really pleased that as part of this, WKAR will open its campus studios as an early voting center in partnership with the East Lansing City Clerk's Office. I've talked with many of our students on campus over the past few weeks about we'll do everything possible to try to encourage them to get out to vote, to provide those opportunities. And we began this conversation with Secretary of State back months ago about increasing our voting precincts here on campus, which was accomplished. I think this is a great example of living our land-grant mission, and because it will help MSU better serve the community that we share, support the democracy that we cherish, and develop the informed and engaged citizens we need to address society's grand challenges. Some of you may have heard me say before that we often are, I think, viewed as being very humble here in East Lansing at Michigan State. It feels like we don't toot our horn very loudly, or maybe people just can't hear it above all the noise. So I want to take a moment to share several other examples of Michigan State's excellence, starting once again with our culture of collaboration. And I talk often about amplifying the excellence, and I'm relying on everyone here to help us amplify the excellence. We start off the year with a welcome boost from the MSU Research Foundation. The foundation has matched its generous contribution from last year by committing $11.8 million for the 2024-25 academic year. And this grant will support key programs including technology commercialization, faculty recruitment, and research initiatives. And so I want to take the opportunity to thank Executive Director Dave Washburn. Thank you, Dave, for your leadership and the foundation for their partnership with Michigan State University. It's incredibly important, so thank you. Other examples of our excellence connect to our role as a vital talent activator for the state of Michigan. A talent activator for the state of Michigan, and I hope that you'll again join me on this journey, because there are ways in which we can do this even better than we already are. Last month, for example, we celebrated a big milestone, graduating the first class of physician assistants from the College of Osteopathic Medicine. With medical professionals in short supply in rural and urban areas alike, physician assistants are increasingly vital to the community healthcare systems and to providing access to care. And that's why I was pleased to see, as many of you did as well, that our graduates who have already accepted positions, three-quarters will practice in the state of Michigan, and almost as many plan to work in a medically underserved community or an area with a healthcare worker shortage. And I also want to congratulate the graduates of this first physician assistant cohort for the great achievements, and also want to congratulate the College of Osteopathic Medicine and its recent number one national ranking for having the most DOs graduates practicing in areas experiencing a health professional shortage. This deep commitment to serve to service is another reason that I'm proud to be a Spartan, and I hope you are as well. And I think that that number one ranking deserves a round of applause. When we last met in Flint for our June board meeting, I learned a great deal more about the incredible work that Spartan doctors and faculty members are doing to support public health in our Michigan communities. And so it gives me great pleasure to know that one of the programs that we help support in Flint, the RX Kids, will expand to another community in Kalamazoo. As in Flint, Kalamazoo RX Kids is a cash prescription program for expectant mothers and infants. We're excited for this launch in 2025, and grateful to the Kalamazoo philanthropic community, the governor, and lawmakers for supporting this important benefit to local expectant moms and babies. A round of applause for the work being done there. And I'm so excited that today the board will be voting to authorize the administration to plan what we're calling the P3 project. It was back in early March when I was out on an early morning run, and I was inspired by the untapped potential of this property at the northeast corner of Harrison and Trowbridge Roads. And I'm confident that this visionary project will transform this space into a dynamic hub of activity and innovation. This multi-purpose development, which will be a public-private partnership, is a bold step toward fulfilling our mission as a passionately public university. We're looking at mixed commercial use options to include hotel space and restaurants to augment the Kellogg Center and additional retail, office, and housing spaces. This has the potential to give our top-ranked business hospitality program a modern facility and new opportunities for hands-on learning. The partnership would also involve planning for a new arena to help our Olympic sports teams. Most Big Ten universities have such facilities that better position them to host regional competitions that will come with the conference expansion. It'll also help local high school conferences to hold state championships at such an arena. Given our Central Michigan location, I think this will be ideal. The development will also consider development of state-of-the-art facilities for much-needed teaching, research, and clinical spaces to further advance our culture of collaboration across our colleges and local healthcare providers. And so this project has the potential to elevate every aspect of Michigan State and the experience that our students, faculty, staff deserve. And it'll also, I think, provide opportunities for our alumni and the entire community. So more to come on that, but I'm very excited that we are moving this project forward. Finally, while the future looks bright, I thought that I'd close by recognizing past Spartans who have excelled on the field of athletic competition. I'm looking forward a week from now to helping induct the class of 2024 of the MSU Athletics Hall of Fame. In addition to honoring an amazing group of student athletes who represented Michigan State so well in various sports, it also includes the entire 1965 and 1966 Spartan football teams, both who won national championships. Not only did those teams earn a place in Spartan history with those back-to-back conference and national titles, but under head coach Duffy Doherty, they broke through racial barriers, as you know the story. And so we will celebrate these two teams, and they really sort of set the bar for other universities to follow, and where with a diverse future of college football back in the mid to late 60s. It's an amazing story, and as is that of former head coach Mark D'Antonio. In just a couple of weeks, we will celebrate his election in the College Football Hall of Fame by placing his name in the Ring of Honor at Spartan Stadium. So congratulations, Coach D'Antonio. Many of you had a chance to see him as our convocation speaker back on April the 26th at Breslin. He was fantastic as a convocation speaker, just as he was as a coach here for 13, 14 years, and as the winningest football coach in Michigan State's history. So athletics are a great source of unity and community within a university, reminding us once more that we are one team. And so on that note, we're going to move on in our agenda with the rest of the business in front of us for today. And so with that, I'm going to turn to Doug Gage, Vice Provost for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, for our gift, grant, and contract report.
Thank you. Chairperson Kelly, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is May 30th through August 7th, 2024. The total value of this period is $190,125,329.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report?
Support.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. Thank you. And now I'm going to ask Vice Provost Gage to introduce today's research presentation.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to introduce our first research presentation of the new academic year. We all take great pride in the College of Education and its number one rankings in teacher education, curriculum, and educational administration. Some of those positions have been held for nearly 30 years. Those successes, though, are based upon research excellence, which we may not be as familiar with. And today, we're going to feature one of the many stellar contributors to that effort. Professor Barbara Snyder is the John A. Hanna Chair and University Distinguished Professor in the College of Education and the Department of Sociology at Michigan State University. Her research focuses on how social context of schools and families influence academic and social well-being of adolescents into adulthood. Dr. Snyder has also developed tools and research methods for measuring real-time, everyday experiences that improve academic learning. Dr. Snyder earned her PhD from Northwestern University and joined MSU from the University of Chicago to support the university's emphasis on evidential research. A fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the National Academy of Education, the American Educational Research Association, and the Finnish Academy of Science and Letters. And I think that may be the first Finnish Academy member we've introduced. A recipient of over $100 million in research funding for her current study, for her research studies. And she'll be talking today about a very important topic. And the title of her talk, as she'll explain, is Culturally Responsive Science Learning and as Evidence-Based Approach in the Rural South. And it's really designed to advance secondary school education and learning. And so I think you're going to enjoy her talk today. And so without further ado, Professor Snyder.
Thank you very much. I just have to lower this a little in case you didn't notice. The first thing people say to me is, oh, you're short. But mighty. Anyways, today I'd like to first of all thank Doug Gage, who really has been a major support in all of our work. This particular grant that we received from the U.S. Department of Education was for $8 million, but the original grant was $4 million from the National Science Foundation. Both of these grants got Doug Gage's major support and encouragement, and I'm eternally grateful. What makes this particular grant so unusual is that we have formed a partnership with two historically black colleges and universities, the first Alabama A&M, and second Winston-Salem University in North Carolina. Essentially, these two institutions are our partners. There are four of us who are co-principal investigators to this study, and then because the U.S. Department of Education insists that we have a private evaluator, we have Elizabeth Tipton, who is a full professor at Northwestern in statistics. So let me go on and just tell you something about our remarkable team here at MSU, which I am so incredibly proud. We have, first of all, three postdocs. The postdocs, one from Israel, one who is a Turkish national, and then one we were able to recruit from the University of Texas, Austin. We have six graduate students who are working on all different programs within the College of Education. We have one natural sci master's student, and then we also have two undergraduates who are very involved in our research. We build our research teams where everyone comes to every meeting, so in fact we're developing a culture and an understanding and a dialogue where people are able to talk about our work no matter what audiences they are in. So the first issue that I want to talk about is, why is this a societal obligation? And it really truly is a societal obligation. First of all, our society needs right now more than ever scientific literacy and technological expertise. Yet we are not preparing young people for this, beginning in elementary school all the way through secondary school. Second, this need is especially problematic in the rural South, where thousands of talented students are not being exposed to advanced science courses, which we know are the pathway to higher education. And finally, we have a serious shortage of science teachers, particularly at the secondary level. this was a problem before COVID, and now it's really a horrendous problem that's only gotten worse. So you've got to ask yourselves, well, what are we doing to do something about this? Well, the first thing is that we created an intervention for chemistry and physics in secondary school, and we rigorously tested it in Michigan and California, which increased STEM achievement, engagement in learning, and college ambitions. All of those things have been rigorously reported in, first, our Learning Science book by Yale University Press, second, lead research article in The Education Researcher, and then finally in a series of different kinds of publications and journals. The one I've put up there is for the Journal of Research in Science Teaching. So we responded to the Department of Education's solicitation, but we did something different. We said, we're going to slightly alter our innovation. We're going to make it culturally responsive to the three major tenets of what our intervention is about. And the intervention is about curriculum, it's about assessments, and professional learning of teachers that are science teachers already in science classrooms. So, how did we form this relationship with our HBCUs? Well, first of all, we wanted to make sure that we were addressing public education. And this is really our first thought. And what we did here is we thought, well, we've got to get partners, really true of partners, that will be part of our group. And we meet every other week as a full team with our partners. We've been to these institutions, and they're key in everything that we do. Second of all, we wanted to capitalize on the knowledge and experience of HBCUs, because what HBCUs do is that they have a reputation for being able to take students in their undergraduate programs and move them on for professional careers, and especially into the workforce. So this is something that we wanted to learn more about and how they were being successful at doing that. And then here I would like to thank our Dean Jackson, who for all practical purposes are the reason we have these partnership agreements and now are also trying to work in Mississippi. So why the Rural South? Well, the Rural South is really a very important place to our country. Why? Because one in every seven students basically live in poverty. One in every seven students needs special education. One in every nine students have, unfortunately, the problem of moving all the time. And then finally, the most tragic part of anything is there's very limited broadband in the rural areas. And this is having a tremendous impact on what young people are able to learn in their science courses. So, why do they pick us? I mean, what are we doing that's different than anybody else? There are not a lot of these people that win the awards. In fact, out of 42 of these awards, only six of them went to universities, and we're the only major public university that got one of these awards. Well, first of all, we do with what's called a randomized controlled trial. Basically, we have a treatment and control condition. Don't get anxious about an idea of a control condition, because essentially what we're doing there is it's business as usual, nothing that we're withholding from anybody. And then we look at the differences in the intervention and see, well, what happened? Did we do better? Hopefully we will do better. The second thing, and we test this very rigorously, the same kinds of things that we do in medicine, the same kinds of things that we do in engineering. Our team is very multidisciplinary, and I would like to just take a second to point out the pictures. So we've got Jill Krajcik, who's an expert in science education research, Shanika Williams, who is the department leader in policy and education administration. She works with all of our outreach. Clausel Mathis, the youngest member of our team, is the new assistant professor in physics education, and then myself, whose work is primarily in research design, measurement, and analysis. And so what did we do? Well, we developed a holistic intervention. Our intervention improve student academic, social, and emotional learning. We have advanced technology for measuring student and teacher emotion and social well-being in situ while they're doing classroom activities. And finally, we have valid and reliable measures for discerning how our formative and our summative evaluations actually work. So the goals of our study are to support teachers in the development of learning environments, and we do this by using project-based learning, having students figure out phenomenon, integrate core ideas, cross-cutting concepts, and scientific practices, and we promote cognition, behavioral, and emotional engagement. And so how and why do we bother with this engagement idea? Why? Because we think the most important point here is to involve students in a meaningful why, having them try and figure out a puzzling phenomenon, being able to think about a problem for which they don't know the answer to, but they can finally be able to solve an answer. This is very important because it creates creativity, it involves engagement, and finally, it's that students are much more likely to persist and learn new ideas. And this we have very valid measures on. You have to understand, in our first study, we had 6,000 students that we collected this information of over 30,000 different responses to be able to show you why our model of engagement actually works in terms of science achievement. So what about our project-based learning, what we do with our students? Let's be real careful to understand this is not about doing a project. This is about taking disciplinary core ideas that basically ask meaningful questions, create wonder. We have a strong emphasis on figuring out problems and essential ideas and engaging in collaborative activities, and we build scaffolds for learning so this will actually happen. And then finally, we create artifacts. But these are not just simply projects. These are projects that really culminate all the kinds of activities that we are engaged in. And finally, I just want to say something about culturally based approaches to science instruction, because this is new. This is something that we had not done before. And I thank my colleague, Claustel Mathis, who was very influential in all of this. So I'd like you first to get a bit of an emphasis to kind of look at his definitions of understanding science instruction, which integrates students' culture and community resources and experiences when teaching and learning science. And our goal is to make science more relevant and meaningful to students by connecting their lived experiences, cultures, and communities. So if you look at the diagram, the middle part is kind of where the field has been for the last two decades, and the little kind of clouds are basically what Claustel and our team are building new, which are responding to students' cultural and community assets, which are there in the community, having teaching that is mindful of supporting students' cultures, and finally relating to students' lived experiences. So what's going to happen? This is the last slide. What's going to happen is hopefully we're going to have 3,840 students. Actually, we're planning on a few more, working with Mississippi to make that happen, 132 teachers and 66 high schools. Now, in our prior work, we were able to raise achievement scores by 8 percentage points. Our goal here is to go over 10. What we're able to do is we can move students from being non-proficient on state tests into the proficient category. That's quite an accomplishment, and we're very proud of that, and that's another one of the reasons that we received this award. So what will we be doing now in our new award? We will be conducting, similarly, a randomized controlled trial. We will go through the phases of what the same kind of phases that we use when we do medical research, where we have a development period, we have a field test, and then we have an efficacy study before we move to scale. And then we will apply those same, as I said before, statistical tools that are used in all other kinds of basic research. And then finally, for those of you that are at all statistically inclined, we'll use a block design measured with pre and post measures, a control set, and it'll be measured with hierarchical linear modeling. And then you've seen this little QR code. We put this in, and we decided, well, this isn't the place to explain about randomized controlled trials. I'm sure this isn't going to be of interest to everybody. So basically, you can read the proposal. If you put your phone up there, you'll be able to read our proposal. You'll be able to get a primer on randomized controlled trials. So when other people in the university come up here and they start telling you about what they've done and how they're kind of coming up with these great answers, you'll know something about how they do it. And then finally, our last publication, which basically told us what we know and why people are willing to invest in us again today. And I want to say thank you very, very much for allowing me to come and talk to you. I've had a wonderful career here at Michigan State University. I've done wonderful things in my life here. This is the what I would call the crown of what I've been able to do. And I'm very excited to be able to lead this effort from a wonderful, wonderful team of colleagues, partners, and students, and to thank the board for giving me this opportunity to talk to you today. Thank you. And now I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
I geek out on education, so I appreciate this whole project. I appreciate your partnerships that are very intentional. And I do know that even though it's in the Deep South, right, in rural areas, that research is going to make a difference here in Michigan as well, because those characteristics you can find here in this state. So it's going to translate straight over to this state, and I just appreciate that contribution. But the HBCU partnership is really important. I did have a question. So you said this is a treatment, the intervention is to teachers. So you're working with their TEDs as well? How is this working?
Sure. Thank you so much for the question. The project is really, the focus is the student. Mm-hmm. So I want to be real clear about that. We're interested in changing the lives of the children so that basically they have a better understanding of science learning and then that they're able to pursue higher education or technical education and have more knowledge in science. And because science to us is so important. To be able to do that, we have to have teachers that are really very good at being able to do instruction. So we spend a lot of time on professional learning. We go to places, we work on that. And then the question that I think you're asking, well, how is this going to work in the South? That's why we have partners, and we chose people that have secondary education programs. We're going to work with them basically to find their teacher leaders, that they, when we get the people that we're going to try and get in our study, because everyone knows how difficult today it is to get schools to participate in studies, they are going to be our conduits to those schools, and they are going to work with our teams. So our teams is us, all of us together, as we work on professional learning with the teachers that are involved in the treatment. We also, because of the way that we work, we have special considerations for our control teachers as well. And what we do at the end of our study, we always allow our intervention for the control teachers so no one is left out of the process.
So these are practitioners that are currently in the classroom?
These are practitioners that are currently working. However, we're working very hard with our faculty, secondary school people in the South to see how we can strengthen these secondary programs and get more people involved in teaching secondary school science. This is right now, there is a crisis in everywhere. It's not just in the South. It's in Michigan as well. And it was bad before COVID, but it's worse now. In the South, they've done away with requiring chemistry and offering physics. And now the only science class that's actually required is biology. In Michigan, what has happened is they have changed things so that instead of chemistry being a year long, it's now a semester long. These issues about shrinking advanced science learning are so critical and problematic that the Southern Education Foundation, the American Educational Research Association, and NASA are all working with us to try and elevate this issue. At first, I thought it was really just broadband. It's not really just broadband. It's really what kinds of courses. How are we going to have a group of people that are going to move into professional roles, especially with the major changes in science? So we're hoping that Michigan State will go down as the leader in really raising everyone's awareness of the importance of STEM and STEM teaching and learning, especially in the secondary schools.
Well, we know biology and geometry are the gatekeepers, and so if you can strengthen biology, we'll have more students, particularly minoritized students from the rural South, coming to Michigan State. And I was really, really appreciative to see Gloria Latson Billings on your citations, but also Django Paris, who we lost from MSU. But he started here, so I appreciate your nods to the greats as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dr. Schneider, I want to thank you. It was an outstanding presentation, and I love on one of your slides you had about the why question. We have to encourage students, keep them curious, asking why. I've often said that's the most important word in English language. And my question is, are you engaging, and if you said it, forgive me, I may have missed it, but involving some of our pedagogical experts in the College of Natural Sciences, who are national leaders in this space at the college level, I guess, you know, in terms of recreating a more high-structure active learning environment in the classroom?
Yes, and so what we have done, so Joe Krajcik has, of course, an appointment in natural science. We have had conversations, of course, with Melanie Cooper. Klutzfeld is in the physics education program. We're very much aware and all the time talking to people in natural science, because so much of what's going on in natural science right now, especially at the undergraduate level, is really quite amazing. Melanie's work is really outstanding here, and we're very happy that we have a relationship with Melanie. In fact, her student wrote the first round of the chemistry curriculum that we are now in the process of revising. So yes, absolutely, that is the case. In addition to that, I would like you to say that there's something else that we do. We also go to experts, basically, outside, because the one thing that we always get anxious about is that people say, it's just a Michigan team. So if you managed to look at that learning science book, we took our units to Harvard's Smithsonian lab, and the foreword of that book was written by the physics professor there at the Harvard, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting that title of the lab that's run by the Smithsonian Institute at Harvard. So it is the case that we don't want to just say it's just ours. We want people out there to say, oh, it's theirs and it's great. And I just want to leave you with one thing when you asked about the why. So what have we come up with now in terms of new questions? Well, one of them, how is heat impacting the communities that you live in? And that's such an important thing. And the second one, both of these very important to issues of the rural South, is the second one that has to do with what we're doing about lightning. So how can we protect our communities from lightning? And that's sort of how we open our lessons, so that we kind of stimulate these questions of why. So wonderful. Anyway, thank you again.
Just one more way that we will toot our horn.
I sure hope so, and thank you.
Well, great. Thanks so much. I'll now call on Provost Yitzko to present the personnel actions.
Thank you, President Dustowitz. If I can get this to work. There, thank you. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the September 2024 list of personnel actions.
Is there a motion to approve?
Approve.
Second?
Support.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The personnel actions are approved.
I shall list them for the sake of the audience. I present the following tenured faculty appointments. Nadia Abuelazum, DCS, Associate Professor, Department of Family Medicine with tenure, effective October 1, 2024. Pavel Nadolsky, PhD, Professor, Department of Physics and Astronomy with tenure, effective January 1, 2025. Jacqueline Goodway, PhD, Red Cedar Distinguished Professor, Department of Kinesiology, with tenure, January 2, 2025. I present for approval the following appointment. I'm pleased to recommend Rebecca DeVote to the position of Vice President for Government Relations, Executive Management, effective August 12, 2024. I present for approval the following personnel action. Robin Fralick, Head Coach, Women's Basketball, Intercollegiate Athletics, for an amendment to contract effective July 1, 2024. Eric Hegg, PhD, Professor, Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, and Associate Dean, College of Natural Science, for a change in title to Dean, College of Natural Science, effective September 1, 2024. Ioannis John Papapolimerou, PhD, MSU Research Foundation Professor, Electrical and Computer Engineering, and Director of the MSU Space Electronics Initiative, for an additional title of Interim Dean, College of Engineering, effective October 1st, 2024. I present for correction the following personnel action. Hyun-Hui Lin, PhD, Chairperson and Professor, Department of Linguistics, Language, and Cultures, for a change in title to Interim Dean, College of Arts and Letters, effective June 10, 2024. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions. With that, thank you very much for your attention, and thank you for having approved the motion.
How about a round of applause and congratulations to these individuals? I'll now call on Trustee Pierce, who will present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. And let me just start by saying that we have five action items today. And there are colleagues here that can give further information as we go through each one of them if you have any questions or you have any comments. So as Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to negotiate and enter into a lease for space in the City of Lansing for a long-term lease and upon such other terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the President or his designee.
Support.
Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the motion passes.
As Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board hereby authorizes the administration to enter into a long-term ground lease of up to 5 acres with the MSU Research Foundation, a development agreement, and all other documents that are required in connection therewith upon such terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the President or designee.
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the study of the Harrison and Troll Bridge project. President Guskowitz talked about this in his president comments. This is the public-private partnership for a multi-purpose facility and an arena.
Support.
Second? Support. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project titled Anthony Hall Building Envelope Renewal.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Okay, as chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project entitled Plant and Environmental Sciences Building.
Second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Those are the five action items. I just want to say that at the committee meeting and then the board work session, we had very lengthy discussion on all five of them. So the board is thank you for your support on all of these. The committee received updates on the five-year capital plan and the capital outlay request, the fiscal year 2025 capital budget, and the spending policy and review and annual update. Phil Zecker facilitated a discussion regarding investments. This concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. I'll now call on Trustee Byram for the Committee on Academic Affairs.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the conversion of BOT Policy 302, retention of records in archives, and to the standard policy template with amendments as made in Attachment A.
Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion?
I would note that Marilyn Tarrant is here if there's any questions by members of the board.
There's no discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves revisions to the Michigan State University ordinances as indicated in Attachment A, and that the Board of Trustees authorize the Secretary and Chief of Staff to the Board of Trustees to implement any necessary technical revisions to board or university-wide policies to ensure alignment in numbering and cross-references given the revisions.
Support.
Any discussion?
I would just note that Stefan Fletcher is available to answer any questions.
There's no discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
The committee also received a preliminary enrollment report and updates on unionization and accreditation. And finally, I would like to read a statement on behalf of the board as it relates to public participation in board meetings. As mentioned at our last meeting in June, the proposal to institute a time limit on public participation was given further consideration by the board based on feedback received. While implementing a limit on public comment at board meetings is a common practice among our peer universities in the state of Michigan, the board will not be moving forward with instituting a total time limit or any similar restriction at this time. We appreciate the feedback that was received from the university stakeholders on this matter. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Byram. I'll now call on Trustee Scott for the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance report.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approves the following: a sponsored research agreement with IASO Therapeutics Incorporated, an option for amendment to an inclusive license agreement with IASO Therapeutics Incorporated, a second amendment to an exclusive license agreement with IASO Therapeutics, Inc., and a sponsored research agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, Inc.
Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
I, I apologize. I should have said it quicker. We also have Doug Gage here, and he is available to discuss if anyone has any questions.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
The committee discussed upcoming policy work, the annual internal audit plan, and Office of Audit Risk and Compliance Overview, and the NCAA compliance. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. I'll now call on Trustee Tebe for the committee on report on student life and culture.
Thank you. I apologize, everyone. I'm not there. I'm under the weather, and I didn't want to infect everybody else. The Student Life and Culture Committee received presentations on the launch of the academic year and the MSU Vote Initiative. MSU Vote is a nonpartisan campus committee whose mission it is to increase the number of registered student voters to inform and educate students on candidates and issues to bolster student participation on Election Day. MSU has been named as a voter-friendly campus every year since 2016 by the Fair Election Center Campus Voter Project. And NASPA Student Affairs Administration and Higher Education. Recognizing the university's efforts to encourage students to register and vote, Sue Webster and Renee Brown will provide further information on MSU Vote. Sue and Renee?
Good afternoon. Good morning. I'm Renee Brown. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Community Engaged Learning and the Co-Director with my colleague Sue Webster for MSU Vote. And we have good news to share, so we're happy to share with you that Michigan State University has the highest student voting rate, one of the highest student voting rates in the country. We're 7% higher than most campuses that are in that voter-friendly campus designation. And so we wanted to make sure that we share that with you. MSU Vote is a true collaboration, one where campus partners and community partners from all across campus are engaged, including students and faculty, alumni, and retirees. And it's just something that we definitely want to share. As you have spoke about one team, President Guskowitz, it's definitely one team working on MSU Vote. That type of work also leads to things like number one rankings and service learning for this institution, where this work is part of that work, and we want to acknowledge that the contributions of those working on MSU Vote contribute to those sort of accolades as well. Some updates quickly. We have received a small grant, and we will be working with students a little bit differently this election. We will have democratic engagement interns funded by those grants, so students will be working with their peers on voter registration, education, and turnout. And we also have a partnership with the U.S. Federal Work Study Program and the MSU Federal Work or the MSU Work Study Program, where we will be able to be hiring federal work study students to work on election initiatives that are nonpartisan, both here on campus and with local clerks and other partners in the community. And so that is a big part of community work study, and we're happy to share about that. With faculty, there are faculty workshops that are occurring this fall, and there will be students and other professionals speaking in classes, and we definitely want to make sure that we're sharing that news as well. And with that, I will turn this over to my partner, Sue.
Thank you very much. My name is Suchitra Sue Webster. I am the Director of Community and Student Relations and co-direct MSU Vote with my friend and colleague, Renee Brown. Renee gave you some major highlights, and I think it's important just to remember that our mission is to make sure that we provide registration opportunities for students, to educate students on candidates and issues, and provide opportunities for dialogue and discourse, and partner with people on and off campus to ensure that that happens. We believe very strongly that democracy is something that requires participation, and it's not something where you sit back and observe, and that only then can we make things as robust as they possibly can be. I want to just mention a couple of things coming up this fall. We do have, because of our robust partnerships with area clerks, we are very proud to announce, and President Guskowitz alluded to this earlier, the Early Voting Center on campus, which will open on October 21st, and students will be able to go to that center and vote for 14 days before the election. As far as we are aware, this is the only such EVC in the United States at a public media station, and we're very proud to have that at Michigan State University. So accolades and kudos to WKAR, our partners in the clerk's offices in East Lansing and throughout MSU Vote, so we're very excited about that. There are a number of events that will take place in partnership with the Broad Museum, with the MSU Museum, with the Department of Athletics. So stay tuned for lots of those, and I do encourage people to go to msuvote.msu.edu for a robust calendar and general information on what we have going. This is a labor of love, if you will, for Renee and for myself, and we are happy to talk about this in, you know, anywhere that we can do that, and we appreciate the support from leadership here at Michigan State University. Go green, go white, and please go vote.
Great. Thank you.
So, Senior Vice President Gore, a few special guests will discuss several elements of the launch of the 2024-25 academic year. Interim Provost Dietschel, I will turn it over to you to begin the presentation.
Thank you very much, Trustee Tebay. I am exceptionally proud today to announce that MSU has its largest ever enrollment. So I share the excitement that President Guskowitz expressed about the beginning of the term and students being back. And currently we now have over 52,000 students enrolled at MSU for this fall term. In fact, to be exact, it's 52,175 students. There's just over 11,000 new undergraduate students here. Of those, 9,690 are here as first-year students in any college, and we have another 1,385 students who are transferring here from other institutions, including local and regional community colleges from across the state. Over 8,000 of our new undergraduate students come from Michigan, with the largest counties being drawn from Oakland, Wayne, and Macomb. This makes us by far the number one choice for Michiganders looking into attaining higher education. The new undergraduate students are enrolled in 15 of our colleges and cover 188 different majors. We now have enrolled students from 138 countries, all 50 states, and all 83 Michigan counties. The students of color comprise 27.7% of our domestic enrollment, and that is the highest forever at MSU. And with that, let me hand it over to Senior Vice President Benny Gore.
So thank you, Provost Dietschel. It's my pleasure to let the board know how our fall welcome. This was a team effort of all of the student life and engagement team, which represents close to 4,000 full-time, part-time students, undergraduate education, the Office of New Student Orientation. It takes a village to welcome a village, and we just wanted to acknowledge of all the people who participate in that. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So we've had over 16,000 of our students move into the residence halls over 4 days, about 1,300 events over the fall welcome is not just 2 days, it's not just 1 week, it actually is a month, as we seen last night with Spartan Remix. Just as a sense of what our engagement is like, you can see the numbers up on the screen, 35,000 total engagements, which we're really excited because that would begin the fall impact. And we also want to thank our student leadership groups, whether, you know, ASMSU, COGS, and RHA for their support and for their programming. One of the key individuals who helps manage this is Dr. Alan Shaw. He is our Dean of Students and Assistant Vice President for Student Development Leadership, and he's going to introduce our student leaders.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity for having our students be able to talk about the impact of fall welcome. As Senior Vice President Gore said, we've had almost 244,000 contacts with students that we know of just in the last 10 days and over the 1,300 different events put on by the whole entire university. But we have two students we'd like for you to meet who can talk about the direct impact, one an undergraduate and one a graduate. The undergraduate student is Dhruv Toprani, who is from Dubai. He is a computer engineering and honors college student and is also the president of TowerGuard. And then our graduate assistant, graduate student is our graduate assistant at WDBM The Impact. And you may remember her from last year, but we were able to keep her here for grad school. Delaney Rogers, who's from Lake Orion, and she is a journalism master's student. So with that, I'll turn it over to the students to talk about the impact. Thank you both.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Dr. Shaw. I'm Delaney Rogers, as Dr. Shaw just said, the graduate assistant with Impact 89FM. This is now my fifth year at MSU. I just graduated in April with my bachelor's in journalism, and now working on my master's in journalism. And so I've worked for Impact for the last 4 years, and they are a massive reason to the reason I chose to stay at MSU for a master's degree. And I'm here to talk a little bit about Fall Welcome, which was great, and we could take a deep breath at one of the busiest times of the year. It's behind us, yet we still have so much to look forward to. I know those sitting at this table and in the administration are working tirelessly behind the scenes to maintain the overall health of the university, making sure things are running smoothly. So thank you for that. That does not go unnoticed. And from where I stand, I'm happy to see Impact doing our part to contribute to the well-being of campus as well. I want to take a little bit of a moment to talk about some of the things we do behind the scenes with our students while highlighting the ways we are present both on campus and in the community. So as someone who did not have an in-person freshman year because of COVID, it is extremely rewarding to be a part of Impact Radio, especially when we are providing entertainment, music, or other assistance at events during Fall Welcome and throughout the rest of the year. And these Fall Welcome events are a major first impression for incoming students, transfer students, returning ones, new students, and the work we all put in during these first few weeks create long-lasting memories and set the tone for the entire school year, and Impact knows this all too well. In the last couple weeks, we have been a key part of many university-wide events on campus, whether that was providing music for UFest and Sparty Gras, promoting our opportunities as participation, the Comrade Sci Welcome, hosting concerts or Spartan Sessions and FemFest, or making sure the microphones for ASMSU and Dr. Guskowitz sounded great at the Cox Fall Welcome event. We have been there as part of the Spartan experience, and the really neat thing is we have great staff members who are always ready to serve our campus community. With 8 major events happening in 4 days during Fall Welcome, we have numerous volunteers ready to do quite literally anything, and they love doing it, and they want to help doing it, which is great. And that momentum continues throughout the year. We partner with so many different departments and orgs on campus, such as RHA, UAB, ASMSU, COGS, as well as providing DJ services, coverage and entertainment to smaller organizations who reach out to us for free, all for no charge, which is really cool. And students know that the Impact love what we do, and that's a reflection of our dedication to MSU and the community. Last year alone, we were present at over 89 events, which is really cool. And whether that was tabling at concerts as far as Detroit or running the music for the James Madison's College Gala. While students are working incredibly hard to earn their degrees, they also are working incredibly hard at the radio station, which is a really amazing thing, and it does not end there. We host orgs to use our recording spaces. We travel the country bringing live coverage of Spartan athletics to the student body, all while broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I do need to mention that we are incredibly proud of the work that we do, and we've been recognized for it. The Impact has received the Michigan Association of Broadcasters College Radio Station of the Year Award 18 times since the award was first given out in the year 2000. And nationally, we consistently rank in the top college radio stations by the College Media Association and the College Broadcasting Incorporated. In 2021, we were awarded as the National College Radio Station of the Year, and we're finalists again for that award this year, so fingers crossed, we'll find out in a few months. I love this radio station, and my time at this university has been enhanced because of it. I know those who are part of this radio station feel the same way, as well as those who get to engage with our media and reach out to us for our free services. So thank you for your continued support of our program and letting me get to talk about why I love MSU and Impact.
My name is Dhruv Toprani, and I was born and raised in Dubai, UAE. About a year ago, I left my home, I left my everything. I left my friends, family, everyone that I could probably call home, back home in Dubai, took a flight out here, 25-hour flight, finally made it to East Lansing. And when I came in here, I was just a student at Michigan State University, but just being a part of Fall Welcome, being a part of all the events that they had laid out for us, and just checking off things off my Spartan bucket list, that was a transformative experience. It made me from just a student at Michigan State to actually, in its true essence, becoming a Spartan. Now, the fall welcome experience has obviously been a transformative experience for me, but this year I had the unique opportunity to also be a part of that transformative, unique experience as an orientation leader for the incoming students this year. My personal favorite part of this fall welcome has to be participation, because at participation, I found my family, I found my community, I found my people, and with over 700 student organizations present over there, I'm sure every single person was able to find their people. And speaking of people, my closest-knit, tightest group of people that I've found at Michigan State University have been at Tower Guard. Now, as the president of Tower Guard, and Tower Guard in itself hosts this unique opportunity of the fact that it is one of the only student organizations on campus that holds the keys to the Beaumont Tower, which holds keys to the heritage of Michigan State University, and that is absolutely a fantastic honor to have. Founded in 1934, Tower Guard, one of the oldest student organizations on campus, is one of the only active old student organizations. In addition to that, as president of the Tower Guard, it is my duty to uphold the pillars of the Tower Guard in terms of academic excellence, leadership, character, and a commitment to service. Just a quick word about Tower Guard. We work with the Resource Center for People with Disabilities and are striving day in and day out just to make sure that we can provide support wherever possible, be it adaptive sports, be it scribing for exams, be it reading exams, be it tutoring, be it help with syllabi. In essence, what we're striving to do is to make sure that inclusivity and accessibility is more than just an initiative for the Spartan community. Instead, we want to make this a part of our Spartan culture, and that is exactly what we're striving to do day in and day out. Now, I would also like to mention that Tower Guard also hosts Tower Tours, which are obviously a fantastic opportunity for anyone that wishes to see the inside of the Beaumont Tower and just to see the Caroline being played. Currently, we host them on the Wednesday, the first Wednesday of every single month at 12 p.m., so if anyone wants to show up, we're obviously looking to increase the frequency of those tours, just looking at the amount of people that keep showing up every single time we host the tour. So if you want more updates about that, we will be posting about that on our Instagram, which you can check out at MSU Tower Guard. Finally, I would just like to give a big shout out to all of our faculty advisors and student advisors, without whom Tower Guard and its mission and all the great work that we do would not be possible. One of whom is sitting amongst us today, Kristen Campbell. Like a huge round of applause for her, because without her, none of this would have been possible. Just all the work that we do. Finally, I would just like to emphasize that this year, let's take it a step further, and let's make sure that inclusivity and accessibility is not just an initiative, but a part of our culture. Thank you very much. Go Green.
Go White. Thank you, Trustee Tebe. And just a few thoughts here. Drew, I have to get your cell phone number, because I have had friends visiting on multiple occasions, and I've wanted to go up to the to Beaumont Tower, the top, and my access card gets me into a lot of buildings, but they have kept me from being able to get up there. So let's talk afterwards. I'll call you, and we'll hang out together up top of Beaumont Tower. So thank you. And I'm committed to your last request. We will be an inclusive community, and I want to work together with you on that. Delaney, thank you. I had a chance to spend a little time with you, I think, at UFest, and maybe it's participation, and I look forward to hanging out with you and your colleagues over at Impact 89 FM. And so thank you for all that you do. I will say this, whether it was Spartan Games, UFest, Sparticipation, the UCOG Welcome Back event, I was so impressed. This was my first sort of welcome back week, month, as Vinny said. I think it was more like a month. Just so impressed with the commitment to this and welcoming our students. There's something for everyone. There's multiple things for everyone. And our students, upperclassmen and graduate students, play a large part in that. So thank you for all of that. And I extend that to Vice VP Gore and Dean Shaw. And also, I just want to say something to Sue and Renee, thanks for all that you do, not just around promoting democracy through our emphasis on active participation in elections, but I really enjoyed last month spending some time over in your space celebrating that number one ranking that we have attained in service learning. It's something we should be really proud of, and one more thing that we'll toot our horn about. So thanks for the presentations. It was fantastic. So with that, I will turn over the microphone to Board Chair Dan Kelly for our student liaison report.
Yes, we have a report from. We have a report from the student liaisons. Who's first? All right.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm glad to be here today representing the voices of MSU's graduate and professional students. Today, I bring three topics to the board about the Council of Graduate Students, or COGS, most of which are updates about topics that I reported on at our June board meeting. First off, I wanted to bring to your attention a big success that COGS is celebrating right now. We just heard a lot about Fall Welcome, and COGS recently just held our own Fall Welcome event on August 24th. It's one of the biggest events that we do every year, and we've hosted one for over a decade. The purpose, of course, is to welcome our incoming graduate and professional students to MSU, while also connecting them to key campus programs and resources. The event was a great success. By our estimate, we had about a couple hundred attendees throughout the afternoon. And we were supported by donations from 9 different MSU colleges, 4 different MSU offices, the Wharton Center, the Graduate School, as well as 21 local Lansing and East Lansing area businesses. We are very grateful for the support that MSU provided to this event and are happy that so many units within MSU recognize the value of this event for their graduate and professional students. I also want to quickly thank the president, the provost, the dean of the graduate school, as well as senior vice president for student life and engagement for stopping by and welcoming graduate and professional students. I cannot really imagine a better way to kick off our fall semester. On the topic of making sure our graduate and professional students feel welcome at MSU, I wanted to bring to you another update on the Council of Graduate Students Equity and Anti-Discrimination Report. As a reminder, this is a report that's assembled yearly by COGS's Equity and Anti-Discrimination Committee, which is run entirely by graduate and professional students. This committee has the vital job of identifying key DEI-related priorities for COGS to address each year. And a key gap identified this past cycle was that our constituents tried to derive most of their sense of belonging at MSU from the individual departments and programs they are getting their degrees from. However, our constituents often feel a lower sense of belonging at the department or program level compared to other levels in the university or other communities that they might identify with. In response to this finding, one of the goals at our next membership meeting is to pass legislation that will rejuvenate one of our sort of longer dormant graduate student organization support programs within COGS. The intention is to have an award aimed at supporting smaller, intimate gatherings within a given program or department that promote belonging. This contrasts a little bit with previous years, where the main focus of our support has been on large events that span across programs and departments. And we will continue to support these types of events as well, but hope to make supporting at a smaller scale as well more of a priority. We think addressing this gap will help our graduate and professional students feel at home at MSU and allow them to continue doing the research, teaching, service, and art that are integral to the success and strategic plans of MSU. In summary, graduate and professional student belonging is likely to be a big theme for COGS this year. So I wanted to end my report by giving you a heads up on other key topic areas and priorities for COGS that you will likely be hearing about repeatedly this year. These are areas that the COGS Executive Board, composed of myself and 7 other graduate and professional students, identified during a recent planning session, and it's based on what we've been hearing from our constituents. Some of these topics probably won't be surprising because they often come up for graduate and professional students across the nation, but they are important for MSU as well. These key areas include focusing more on the needs of our international graduate and professional students, which compose close to half of our graduate and professional student population, focusing more on addressing student thesis advisor conflict, which can significantly hinder student success, and finally strengthening the connection between COGS and our medical and law schools, ensuring that the voices of our professional students are represented at these meetings as well. Of course, we will also be responding to new issues as they arise, but these are key areas that I think you'll be hearing about a lot this year. This concludes my report. Thank you for listening. Thanks for allowing me to speak today, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Miles. Next, we'll hear from Connor Lee.
Good morning. For those of you who have not met before, my name is Connor Lay, and I am the ASMSU and undergraduate student body president. I have the honor of representing the 50,000 students who call East Lansing home and cannot wait to help further their initiatives to better the Spartan experience for everyone. ASMSU began its summer with preparing and hosting the Association of Big Ten Student Summer Conference here in East Lansing. Here, student government leaders from across the Big Ten, including our new members in the West, engaged in crucial discussions and developed actionable strategies for the upcoming academic year to help better student life across the Big Ten. That means get ready for some great student-led advocacy from us. Focusing on the beginning of the school year, ASMSU is hoping for a much more calmer year for MSU administration. Coming in from a year riddled with scandals, lawsuits, and open feuds, we aim to advocate and accomplish several initiatives, such as increasing accessibility on campus, fighting student hunger, improving mental health resources, and advocating for divestment. We as students want to accomplish this work, but it cannot be done without a proper governing body at Michigan State, who are open to hearing student needs and concerns. With this new year, we hope that we can work together with all of you in a transparent relationship in order to better the lives of all the undergraduate Spartans you represent. ASMSU is also aiming to improve our marketing to the student body. We want as many students as possible to know of the services we provide to them and the work we are doing for them. We've done a great job already during Fall Welcome, as we got around 250 interested students signed up to learn more about ASMSU. We hope to further increase this in the future, so this is a shameless plug to follow us on Instagram if you don't already. ASMSU's legislative session began last Thursday with the first meeting of the fall semester for our General Assembly. At this meeting, we passed bills approving our GroupMe guidelines, our public comment guidelines, and approved our directors and student representatives in academic governance. While we're starting off small, expect great advocacy from us in the future. Lastly, I want to implore the board to please listen to those behind us right now and to who came here to public comment. Integrity and respect are two of MSU's key values, and if you care about these values and the communities you represent and transparency and communication from you as a governing board, then you will take time to thoughtfully listen to each of their comments. Thank you, and I conclude my report.
Thank you, Connor. Next is Aaron Caldwell.
Good morning. For those of you I haven't met yet, my name is Aaron Caldwell, and I am serving as the Residence Halls Association's 55th president. RHA had a great summer that prepared us for a strong year. This June, we took a delegation to New Mexico for the annual National Residence Halls Conference. The team brought back a lot of valuable knowledge, and we all survived the New Mexico heat in the summer. We also completed renovations to our office in Holden Hall this summer, allowing our leadership team more space to work. All of this led to a great fall welcome. After a week of training, RHA was able to welcome and engage with on-campus students at a variety of fall welcome events. We received over 400 campus involvement interest forms and are very excited to be able to reach more students than we ever have before. Team members are already planning community building events for the upcoming semester, starting their own initiatives, and working with campus partners to improve the on-campus living experience. Following fall welcome, we have begun to get back housing numbers and have been able to start creating our budget for the year. The tax that each on-campus resident pays will go directly back to residents. A portion goes to our leadership team budgets and payroll. A portion goes to each hall government, Black Caucus, and Queer Caucus. A portion goes out to CORS and COPS funding. And a portion is allocated to our Committee on Budget, which is able to fund registered student organizations and their initiatives. We begin our General Assembly meetings next week to kick this all off. And throughout this year, RHA is focusing on two main goals. The first is accessibility. Coming from a social work background focused on disability, my main goal is to make sure that both our physical and virtual spaces are accessible to all students at Michigan State. This has started to look like closed captioning at meetings, making our office more accessible, and condensing our online materials to also become more accessible. Our second goal is engagement. RHA offers a wide amount of resources, and this year we are placing a focus on making sure that more on-campus students are able to benefit from this. We have a great team this year, and I'm so proud of all the work we've already done. I'm excited to see where the 55th session takes us. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Eric. Next is Maddie Dallas.
Hi, all. For those who might not know or remember me, my name is Maddie Dallas, and I'm currently serving as the at-large student liaison for the second year in a row. It's so nice to be back on campus for the first meeting of the academic year. One of the biggest excitements about having the opportunity to hold this position again is that I'm able to start the year running rather than learning the ropes. I'm looking forward to a productive year, and I'm excited to see what we can accomplish. With it being the first meeting, I don't have many updates outside of that I'm looking forward to building on the foundations I set last year regarding my student leadership initiative. Student leadership is something we spoke about a lot last year and being aware of how much energy it can take. That's why I'm hoping to be able to work with those around me and get this project off the ground to help support and connect student leaders all across campus with resources that can benefit them. I'm also looking forward to continuing to look into different communications issues that we've spoken about before. I know that the board values hearing from students and wants to ensure that communication between the university, administration, and students is strong. I think by doing this, it would also help the university as a whole come together as a community. In other news, at the end of last year, there was a lot of work put into redefining what it means to be the at-large student liaison. I was able to help work on what this position was going to look like for the future and then happily step back into it. One of the biggest changes to this position for this year is that I will be serving as the chair to UCSLE. This will help ensure that the at-large student liaison position will continue to be integrated into the university in many different capacities. The first meeting of the year will be later within the month of September. I'm really looking forward to what this year will bring, and I can't wait to continue to work with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Angela Wilson on behalf of the faculty liaison.
Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. We are really excited about a new academic year and the opportunity to move forward with all of you as we continue to further strengthen and build MSU. Over the summer, there's been much progress in policies and procedures, not only on your behalf, but also on the provost side. We really enjoy the opportunity to engage in those, to provide feedback for those. We really think that all of these, you know, they impact MSU leadership, they impact faculty, they impact our staff. These guidelines and guideposts are so important in navigating situations that we encounter, and we, you know, certainly we have much work to do, but certainly a lot of progress has been made, so thank you so much for that. We particularly want to thank Trustee Scott as chair and the other members of the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance for their work on board policies. For Trustees Tebay's further noted affirmation yesterday of the board standing by the president as one voice in communication, and Trustee Byram, who serves as a trustee advocate to the faculty. She has been so committed to us, to MSU, and we appreciate all that she has done. With the trustees yesterday, we spoke about a number of topics. One is on policies and procedures, which I've already mentioned. A second is on the faculty union. There have been increasing concerns about the time that is taken for the union formation. There are often presumptions that such matters are intentionally stalled. The faculty liaisons have met with the provost and members of his team, and there are substantial complexities in forming a union. It is important to do this once and to do it right. No such formation of a large, complex university can happen with a magic wand, and unfortunately a lot of faculty seem to believe that. We have encouraged greater communication, and from what I understand, communication is forthcoming. This is very important. As you can hear from outside, we understand that's faculty and, you know, not our doing. I encourage patience to the faculty in this process. It is indeed moving forward, and again, it is to make sure it's happening correctly. We have discussed investments with the board in MSU and with the president. We are excited about our new lead of our government affairs office and look forward to strategies towards increased investments in MSU for our students, staff, and faculty. We also had a discussion on civil discourse, and we'll be having further discussion on this at meetings of the Faculty Senate and University Council. We fully support the president and his statement made in the Lansing Journal. Another area we will be working towards is with the provost office on more common evaluation processes and a lot of other issues that really, impact the faculty in various ways. There's been a lot of work in this area, and some useful strides have been made. There is more work to be done. Practices that have long been held by units and new middle unit leadership that continue naturally in an organization of our size do not result necessarily in consistencies or not always best practices, and we will be working towards this and look forward to this partnership. We have had great successes. New faculty are impressive with very strong hiring. We've been able to bring in faculty who are well ready to teach, to obtain funding, to be recognized more swiftly on the national and international fronts, as well as many who are incredibly engaged in Michigan to really make a difference in our state. These are important long-term investments that we are able to make with your support, and we appreciate your ongoing support of faculty growth and retention. Now I'm going to turn this to another pathway, and this is just a personal observation, because I have great respect for the board and all that you have done. I came from the state of Texas, where all of the trustees are appointed by the governor, all of that, and you all chose to run. And I watched the process this year, and what you have had to do to become members of the trustees is just absolutely remarkable. And I want to thank you for taking those steps, for investing the time in doing this. I cannot believe you've had to campaign on all kinds of issues and issues that you don't even necessarily have the opportunity to address as members of the board, because members of the board, you oversight our processes, you oversight so many things not necessarily related to the issues that people run on. And so really want to thank you for taking the time to do this. And, you know, I have sat here because processes are a lot different in Texas. To hear that you're willing to hear all these comments and often take a lot of beating on behalf of the university. I want to thank you so much for that and look forward to working with you, and just wanted to really acknowledge great appreciation for all of your work and all of your time. Over this year, my colleagues in the faculty in the faculty and academic staff leadership and I, we all look forward to looking at, I'm sorry, I just had eye surgery. I can't quite read. So I look forward to working with you towards positive change and opportunities at MSU. And finally, again, I will very much thank you for all that you do.
So with that, we'll turn to Chair Dan Kelly for the chair's report.
All right, thank you. I want to echo the president and welcome the students and faculty back to campus. On behalf of the Board of Trustees, we wish you all a successful year. Building on the president's comments earlier in the meeting, I want to affirm on behalf of the full board our support of the commitment to a safe and respectful campus where free speech is valued, civil discourse is encouraged, but discrimination and harassment is not tolerated. With the start of this new semester, as board chair and on behalf of the entire board, we would like to reaffirm the board's commitment to continuing to foster productive, positive engagement between the board and the university leadership, emphasizing the one-team approach championed by the president. As President Guskowitz mentioned, the board has diligently worked on its governance protocols and the commitments that were approved last December. We want to continue to build a foundation of trust and shared purpose that will guide our actions for the good of the Spartan community. A little cleanup. As the Board of Trustees is charged with conducting an annual performance evaluation of the Michigan State University president, this process is led by the Committee on the Budget and Finance. This year, the process focused on goal setting for the president in 2024-25. Despite the president being in office for only 6 months, the board supports and appreciates the proactive approach taken during his relatively brief time to stakeholder engagement, including the listening and learning tour, and a consistent emphasis on a one-team approach, as well as the steps already taken to lay the groundwork for a positive next chapter in MSU's history. In terms of goals for 2024-25 objectives, were discussed across 5 areas related to the president's responsibilities and the university needs. Those included strategic vision and planning, operational excellence, stakeholder engagement, governance and compliance, and organizational development and planning. The president and board engaged in a collaborative discussion across these areas, and the board supports the goals established by the president for the 24-25 year. The board looks forward to its continued engagement with the president on the opportunities that await our university under his leadership. The board thanks Vice President Brogdon for her guidance during the year's presidential goal-setting process. In recognition of the president's performance to date and consistent with the terms of his contract, I move the following: that effective October 1, 2024, President Guskowitz's base salary be increased in alignment with standard salary increases provided to other executive management positions, and that the chair of the Board of Trustees be authorized to execute any documents necessary to effectuate this action.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes. Thank you.
You didn't ask for discussion, but I would just say it's well earned. We appreciate all that you have done. We have heard nothing but positive and glowing reviews, and we look forward to working with you under your leadership. So,
thank you.
I wanted to say that. Sorry.
I appreciate the support of the board. Thank you.
Great. All right, that concludes my report.
Secretary Fletcher.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. We'll now turn it over to Vice Chair Tebe.
Thank you, Kevin. Echoing the President and Chair Kelly, I just wanted to say welcome back to everyone. I always get excited to see all of our new returning students join them with you. I'm looking forward to another year working with our student liaisons. Thank you, Miles, Connor, Aaron, and Maddie for stepping up and serving our students. I also want to thank Manny Gorn and the entire Student Life Engagement team for orchestrating a highly successful move-in week. Your hard work ensured a smooth and positive transition for our students as they began this new chapter of their academic journey. I also would like to acknowledge some of our students who are making a global impact. This year, out of 9,000 applications, 9 Spartans have accepted the Fulbright Student Award. These students will be traveling to 7 different countries to conduct research or teach English during the 2024-2025 academic year. Congratulations to you all. I also would like to congratulate our women's soccer team, which defeated number 15 Notre Dame, making the program's first win over the Irish since 1989. They're now ranked 5th in the nation, which is an incredible accomplishment. We also received a note recently from Mike Stout, the president and founder of Michigan Waterways Stewards, acknowledging our club crew team for their exemplary community service in cleaning the Grand River and its surrounding areas. Thank you so much for our crew team and for your exceptional leadership and dedication for service. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tebe. Trustee Byram.
Thank you. I want to echo everyone's comments about a successful fall welcome and say, welcome back, Spartans. Also want to acknowledge it's Angela Wilson's first meeting as the chair of the Faculty Senate Liaison. So welcome. I'm looking forward to working with all of you this coming year. I want to give an extra shout-out to MSU Votes. Excellent presentation by both Sue and Renee. And for me, I'm so excited about MSU Vote because we know that if students begin voting at 18 or early in their career, that they're going to become lifelong voters and lifelong participants in our democracy. So for me, that's what it's all about. I would encourage student organizations, the faculty, and all of the colleges across campus to get involved with MSU Vote. It makes a difference, and it strengthens our democracy for decades to come. As I normally do, I want to share some honorifics of some of our outstanding faculty members. I want to recognize a few faculty members who have received honors recently. Congratulations to Dr. Joan Rose, a renowned expert in water science, for her remarkable contributions to public health. Dr. Rose has been honored as the International Water Association Global Water Award. This is a prestigious recognition that celebrates her decades-long career dedicated to protecting our most vital resource, water. We are incredibly proud to have Dr. Rose as part of our MSU faculty. Also, I'd like to commend Professor Emeritus Dr. Dan Gold for receiving the North American Society for the Psychology of Sport and Physical Activity Distinguished Scholar Award. This distinguished honor reflects Dr. Gold's significant contributions to the field of sports psychology and his lasting influence on the study and practice of sport and physical activity. These accomplishments exemplify his excellence and dedication to the Spartan community. And lastly, congratulations to Professor Sonia Fitchy and her team for winning the Delphi Award for their project, the Charting Pathways of Intellectual Leadership Initiative. Non-tenure-track faculty as full academic partners in the College of Arts and Letters at Michigan State University. This award supports faculty in student learning and community engagement. We are fortunate to have such outstanding individuals representing our institution, and the achievements bring great pride to all of us. This concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Byram. Trustee Denner.
Thanks. I'll be really short. I just want to thank President Kevin Guskowitz for your leadership and for all you're doing for Michigan State University. And I would like to thank everyone in law enforcement for all you do for our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Denno. Trustee Pierce.
Thanks, Stefan. Welcome back to the students and the faculty, and looking forward to this year working with my fellow trustees as well as President Guskowitz. I just want to mention that I was so impressed today with Dr. Schneider, with Delaney, with DeRouve, with Sue and Renee, and with the student liaisons and Angela for representing the faculty liaisons. Thanks for your comments and your presentations. They were really very impactful for me. I want to just highlight a couple of initiatives happening at our school. Since its launch in 2015, the Global Impact Initiative has really played a pivotal role in recruiting top-tier faculty across key research areas. And I want to commend all of them for their good work and wish them well as they enter phase two of this initiative. It's going to provide new positions to support research in areas that are really core to our 2030 strategic plan. Secondly, let me talk about our award of over $32 million in state funding for 8 key projects and programming initiatives. President Guskowitz mentioned RX Kids expanding to Kalamazoo. That is one of them, as well as the animal architecture to the Michigan Traditional Arts Program. This funding, secured as part of the state's 24-25 budget, directly supports our university's strategic plan, and it reinforces our long-standing land-grant mission. The state investment clearly acknowledges the important role that we play in driving innovation, in driving economic development, and in driving societal progress. So I want to say that we're grateful to the governor and the legislature for this support, and we're excited to continue these initiatives. That concludes my report.
Thank you very much, Trustee Pierce. Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I would also like to welcome back all of our students, the faculty, staff, and administrators. I had the honor, I believe, of attending my very first Spartan Remix last night, and I got to mix it up, learn a couple dances, meet a lot of student groups, take a lot of fun pictures, and I really enjoyed it, and I got to eat some great tamales and chicken. It was fabulous, so I will definitely go back. But I also wanted to just highlight something that I thought was really special with it, and I thought was beautiful. When I walked in, they had the Native American students dancing in all of their colorful cultural attire, and it was just a breathtaking thing to see everybody surrounding them while they were showing us the beauty of their culture. It was just such a remarkable experience. So the highlight of it, and I took plenty of photos. So I appreciated that opportunity. I also wanted to just shout out, coming back yesterday, I was really excited to see everybody, our administration, the president. I gave a lot of hugs, and I just wanted to shout out the great presentations we received. We have some remarkable administrative staff here that are doing some great work. So I wanted to shout out specifically Heather Swain and Emily Grant. I really appreciated what they did yesterday and giving us a really good overview of our comms and our marketing. They are doing some really great work. I don't even know if they're here, so they don't hear what I'm saying. But shout out to them. Oh, they are. I can't see you. Heads are all. I can't see you. But shout out to you all. I also wanted to shout out Kim Tobin, because I am very excited about what we're about to do with our capital campaign. And I know that we are going to generate some excitement and raise some funds for this university. And I thank you for your leadership. Shout out to Laura Ruggles and all of the dynamic work that you're doing and making sure that our students on campus are well aware of the resources that we have to provide them for any of the issues that they may encounter during their time here. And safeguarding our staff and faculty as well with the resources that are provided and your oversight. So thanking her for that. And Lisa with keeping our money straight. And I had a really great time last night. I'm sorry. I'm just excited to be here. But I had a really great time last night at Cowell's house, having the opportunity to sit with Harold. I don't even know if he's here. Stefan, who that's the name we learned yesterday. It's really Stefan, everyone. And Brian Quinn, and who else? Phil, I think Phil was at our table. But just getting to sit and having those opportunities to talk with people and getting to talk about our families and our dogs. And I believe it's just so important to create and facilitate.
My board members at the time had lost more than 13 family members due to the genocide. The impact of this genocide has had on MSU students has been immense, but unfortunately, MSU has done nothing about it. When we have undergraduate and graduate student bodies passing bills calling for divestment, and yet the Board of Trustees, who are supposed to represent the university, whose sole purpose is to serve its students, refuses to comply, we start to wonder who you are truly serving here. We, as undergraduate and graduate students under the MSU system, have shown you all what we want, and you still are complacent in standing and continuing this injustice. To look at us straight in our meetings and telling us that it's complicated, as if MSU wasn't the first to completely divest from South Africa. Or the argument over the etymology and semantics over the word ethical, because apparently investing in projects that contribute to the ethnic cleansing of my people is up for debate in the field of morality. Do your job and do what's right. My face and name is plastered all over the internet, and I know that will affect my future opportunities. But I fight and continue in the struggle for my people because my own honor and conscience will not let me stay quiet. Everyone likes to say they would be the one to help the slaves in America or the Jewish people in historical Germany. But when the time comes to stand for what's right in the face of societal backlash and consequence, the truth always shows and the cowards are brought to light. So remember, America tried to justify South Africa, Afghanistan, Iraq. And now they're trying to justify what's happening in Palestine. They say history doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes. So try to take this moment to think whether or not you would like to stand on the right side of history or live the rest of your life knowing you could have done what was right but you didn't. We will make noise, we will not back down, and we will give you hell until we divest from this genocide. Thank you all to the Palestinian people in Gaza who are still standing strong. I only ask God give you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that this country pretends to care about.
Thank you for your comments, Omar. Our next speaker is Brahim Trakani, followed by Wasim El Reyes. Good morning, Brahim.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to talk and share some ideas with you. Every day, we wake up to the news of a loss of tens of Palestinian lives, victims of the Israel war machine sponsored by the U.S. government. Israel has made it abundantly clear that it's not seeking peace, a peace deal, and has prolonged the war on Palestinians for the sake of carrying out its genocidal campaign of famine, disease, and destruction. According to the UN, more than 40,000 people have been killed and over 93,000 injured in Gaza, many of them women and children. More than 88% of Gaza's territory has come under the order of evacuate at any point. Civilians are being forced into an ever smaller area, now equivalent to just 11% of the territory of Gaza. It is difficult, says the UN, to put into words the immense struggle that people are facing to find shelter and other essentials. As we begin the academic year here at home, 600,000 students are not able to go to school, and the 12,000 universities in Gaza have been bombed, so 88,000 students are unable to continue their education. As we speak now, the West Bank has witnessed a relentless attack on the civilians by the Israeli army as well as the settler colonials. Israel has targeted the infrastructure of both the West Bank and Gaza Strip, aiming at making both regions unlivable, as it has engaged in more ethnic cleansing and displacement of the Palestinian people, population, and occupation of their land. Our university cannot, in good conscience, pursue investment in a state engaged in genocide, and has, for the last 75 years, been engaged in the daily brutalization, extrajudicial killing, and disposition of a civilian population. Let us remember that MSU has made as its mission and vision of its activities to lead to a better quality of life of individuals and communities at home and around the world through the continuation of investment in a state driven by state colonial ideologies. We are contradicting the very tenets of our educational mission. Thank you.
Thank you, Brahim. Our next speaker is Wasim El Rest, followed by Jennifer Gett. Good morning, Wasim.
Good morning. Trustees, I want to share an example of the crimes Israeli security forces are committing against my people. These events have been widely reported in the Israeli press, though not in the U.S., and documented by Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem. A few weeks ago, CCTV footage was leaked from inside Sed Teiman, a notorious torture camp in Israel. The footage shared on social media showed several Israeli guards sexually abusing a shackled and blindfolded Palestinian captive. The details are too shocking to share. The assault left the victim with life-threatening injuries to his internal organs. The footage was confirmation of what many Palestinians released from captivity have been reporting for months. Israeli security forces uses sexual assault as a form of torture. Fearing prosecution by the International Criminal Court for war crimes, Israeli military police arrested the guards. As a consequence, a riot erupted, not against the guards, but in support of them. Public outrage forced the release of the accused without charges. A committee in the Knesset publicly debated the justification of sexually abusing Palestinian captives, many of whom are civilians kidnapped from Gaza for no other crime than being Gazan. In the last 10 months, Israel has arrested thousands of Palestinians. B'Tselem writes, quote, "The circumstances and pretexts for arrest are varied. Among the prisoners, both male and female, are physicians, academics, lawyers, students, children, and political leaders. The prisoners form a wide spectrum of people from different areas with varying political opinions. The only thing they have in common is being Palestinian," unquote. Palestinians and the world have learned that absolutely nothing the state of Israel does to us, even when it is out in the open, will have consequences. Depravity is not natural or essential to any human being, group, or society. What my people are suffering today is a product of impunity granted by the most powerful nations on earth. When you, our trustees, refuse to even consider divesting from extreme dehumanizing violence toward other human beings, you give your consent. The genocide in Gaza is not unique. What is unique is that it is in the full view to the global public. There is no plausible deniability. We know what is happening to Palestine. The refusal to action is a moral red line you cross, secure in the belief that the suffering of the powerless and dispossessed is of no consequence to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Wasim. Our next speaker is Jennifer Gett, followed by Daniel Alquist. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Since I had the pleasure of addressing the board in June, MSU's chief investment officer, Philip Secker, and a FOIA request have confirmed that MSU is directly invested in a sovereign bond issued by the State of Israel. Despite Zecker's multiple attempts to deflect institutional responsibility for this investment, MSU faculty and staff for Palestinian Rights wants to make clear to our trustees that when MSU invests in a sovereign bond issued by the State of Israel, regardless of which direction the money is flowing or the life stage of the bond, it has a material stake in that state's success. This investment aligns MSU with a state that is actively engaged in an illegal occupation of Palestinian lands, ethnic cleansing of the West Bank, and a genocide in Gaza. Actions that are condemned by international human rights groups and the International Court of Justice, the highest court on earth. This is not a neutral or apolitical position for MSU. It is, in fact, completely indefensible. MSU's 2023 cash and investments disclosure further reveals a direct investment in a Saudi Arabian government bond, specifically the PVTPL Saudi Arabia Kingdom Global Medium-Term 5% bond. Like MSU's Israel bond, this bond raises serious ethical concerns. Freedom House gives Saudi Arabia a score of 7 out of 100, or not free, noting that the monarchy restricts nearly all political rights and civil liberties in the country and discriminates against women and minoritized groups in both law and practice. Moreover, Saudi Arabia waged a nearly 10-year war against Yemen, killing 377,000 Yemeni people and fueling a humanitarian crisis of epic proportions, using weapons made by many of the same manufacturers that supply Israel's genocide in Gaza. Our research has uncovered direct and indirect MSU investments in 17 of these multinational corporations responsible for incomprehensible suffering, death, and destruction in both Palestine and Yemen. We call on MSU to align its own stated values with its investment portfolio by divesting from all Israel and Saudi bonds, all weapons manufacturers, and all multinational and Israeli corporations that support and profit from occupation, ethnic cleansing, and genocide in Palestine. We demand an ethical investment strategy for our public university, which claims to represent and serve the people of Michigan. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Our next speaker is Daniel Alquist, followed by James Ziadeh. Daniel, good morning.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. I'd like to talk about divestment as well. To be clear up front, I do not support the severing of ties with all Israeli institutions and colleagues. I do, however, support targeted divestment from companies such as those outlined by Dr. Gett, who profit from Israel's invasion and occupation of Gaza, and eventually from all companies who profit from war making. Board Policy 010701 states the trustees are required to, quote, exhibit social conscience in the administration of the university's investments. While social conscience is admittedly vague and open to interpretation, profiting from the killing of thousands of civilians by a modern military is certainly missing the mark, however we define it. And it is a far cry from MSU's stated commitment to, quote, being among the most societally impactful universities, one that lifts people up and addresses issues that matter to people's lives and livelihoods. I understand the argument that universities should remain politically neutral in order to serve a broad public and maintain academic freedom. But let's not mistake maintaining the status quo for neutrality. Our investments make a moral and political statement about what kinds of actions and what kinds of harms we are willing to tolerate in the name of profit. Calls for divestment are often and understandably buffeted by fears of growing anti-Semitism. As a Jewish person, I understand this fear elementally. Last year, the FBI foiled a planned mass shooting at the synagogue where my children attended Sunday school. As scary as this is, it's important that we not hide behind the fear of anti-Semitism as an excuse for silence and inaction. And I want to emphasize that it is not anti-Semitic to hold corporations and even the government of Israel accountable when their actions threaten human life, rights, and futures. We are told that divestment is complicated, and it no doubt is, but that's not a good enough reason not to do it. My grandfather was only able to escape Nazi Germany because a family in Kansas City resisted the convenience of doing nothing and took the difficult steps to bring his family to the U.S. Because of that one family's moral actions, my family was gifted a future. But for families in Gaza now, it's getting harder to envision any future, let alone a flourishing one. Beyond the guns and bombs, they suffer from famine and disease. Their homes and farms have been destroyed, their soil and water polluted, and their infrastructure decimated, and they have nowhere to go. A recent article in The Lancet estimates that this devastation could lead to an indirect death toll of 186,000 or more, and for the survivors, the road to recovery looks bleak at best. But we don't have to stand idly by, implicitly endorsing this scenario with our investment. As imperfect as it is, divestment is a tool at our disposal to better align our investments with our stated values and apply pressure, however small, where it is needed. I know divestment isn't convenient, but doing the right thing rarely is. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Our next speaker is James Padilla, followed by Julie Madej. James, are you with us? Good morning.
Hello, and thank you all for welcoming me here today. My name is James Yetta, and I am a third-year student here at Michigan State. I stand here today to express my disappointment in our university administration's complete lack of accountability for upholding systems of oppression and injustice, particularly in occupied Palestine. As a Palestinian American, I've seen firsthand how the ongoing Israeli settler occupation in Palestine has brought hardship upon my family for generations as they've had to leave their home during the early stages of the occupation. Growing up in the United States, I consistently saw Palestinian voices silenced and experiences invalidated. The Palestinian culture is one of rich history. It is a culture and history that is constantly challenged, delegitimized, and pushed to the periphery by the narratives insidiously opposed upon those in the United States and throughout the West in an effort to strengthen the settler colonial project called Israel. But I want to take a moment here to thank some of you, the committed students, who stand here together and fight tirelessly for the downtrodden while this administration sits here and directly profits off of Israel's war machine as we speak. While my main goal today is to address the administration's responsibility of policy change in regards to Palestine, this university, like many of our other Western institutions, has a history of contributing to injustices throughout the world through investments to the military-industrial complex. You have all seen the consequences of this, and today, Gaza is where these consequences are seen on the most atrocious scale. Aside from a number of weapon manufacturers that our university administration invests in, such as Boeing and Lockheed Martin, the administration annually provides direct aid to Israel and is actively invested in Israeli bonds. The administration is both sending money to Israel and the companies supporting the occupation, and they are making a return on their investments. To put it simply, the financial health of this university is directly tied to how well Israel can maintain its economy and geographic expansion at the cost of the Palestinian people. This is wrong. I know that I'm speaking for my conscious and concerned fellow Spartans when I say that I am sickened by the fact that our money is invested into such a disgraceful enterprise. As students who pay an ever-increasing tuition and who know the administration's track record, we know that calling for divestment isn't enough for you. But will you continue to deny your students a say in the institutions that they make up? We, the students of Michigan State Public University, demand divestment, transparency, and reinvestment into the university and its students. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Our next speaker is Julie Madej, followed by Divya Victor. Julie, are you with us? Good morning, Julie.
Hello, everyone. I appreciate the opportunity to introduce myself and speak on what I believe are some of the most pressing issues MSU faces today. For those I have not yet met, my name is Julie Madej. I am a Spartan mom, one of a graduate, and one of a current student. I am a current candidate for the MSU Board of Trustees. As I said, I am a Spartan mom. My husband and I are proud parents of our son, Blake, who graduated from the Broad College of Business in 2023. My daughter is a current junior studying kinesiology. Our family has spent decades attending various events on campus and supporting the university however possible. I have always been an advocate for education, especially as my kids grew up attending Novi schools. Aside from introducing myself to potential future colleagues, I want to discuss what has motivated me to run for MSU trustee. First, it is my family's love for the hope and promise of our university and understanding of the importance it may have for future generations to come. Second, to bring my common sense approach to the board, focused on accountability and transparency. If we are being honest, the administration and this board have at times failed the university at large, its students, parents, and alumni. We must learn from our past mistakes. It's been far too long, and the university must provide adequate transparency for the Nassar survivors. But this time, we must measure our success based on the feedback and of their satisfaction. We must reach a just and proper resolution for the wrongful dismissal of Dr. Gupta. It has been unfair to the students, to Dr. Gupta, and to our new dean, Dr. David Sauter. We need to rally around David Sauter, Dr. Sauter, and ensure that this lack of administration control does not occur again. Over the past 6 years, the prior administration has made numerous high-profile mistakes that cost the university and taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars, resulted in what seems like a cycle of perpetual bad press for MSU, and is incredibly diminishing our kids' accomplishments. This must change, and it starts with our new administration, so welcome. But we must also have a highly functioning board whose sole responsibility is professionalism and oversight. That's why I decided to run for a position on this board. And I hope the people of Michigan put their confidence in me. But I'm only one person who may or may not be chosen for this board. To have a properly functioning board, all 8 members must be committed to professionalism, accountability, transparency, and common sense. So in the interim, I ask this of the board. Commit to those items. Put the rhetoric, the infighting aside, and do what we've all come to do. Sustainably advance the interests of the university on behalf of all of our children. Thank you for listening to me, and go green.
Thank you, Julie. Our next speaker is Divya Victor, followed by Eric Altman. Divya, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Divya Victor. I'm here to make an appeal. Let us, as an institution, commit in vocal and material ways to the safety of our Arab, Palestinian, and Muslim students and their allies of all identities when they espouse views in support of Palestinian liberation. Let us acknowledge the importance of their expression. President Guskowitz, in your address to our community on August 8th, you said, "Debating ideas is part of our educational experience." I agree with you. You asked us to always demonstrate empathy and intellectual humility. I agree with you. In the humanities, we agree that empathy and intellectual humility are not innate qualities. Students are taught how to relate with empathy and to know its objects. They learn how to be humble in the face of difference. They are taught how to see the inherent value of human life regardless of political beliefs. But they also learn from their communities when they are not openly valued by university, by the people that surround them. They learn this when stories written by powerful people do not include mentions of the harms against them. They learn this when public messaging on campus does not take into account reports on the rise in Islamophobic and anti-immigrant attacks across the nation. When our Arab, Palestinian, and Muslim students and their allies of all identities campaign for MSU to divest from manufacturers who profit from deaths in Ukraine, in Palestine, in Kashmir, they demonstrate empathy. When they research the policies of institutional investments and histories of social movements to build their strategies, they demonstrate intellectual humility. When they cry out for a ceasefire, they demonstrate empathy with those who need it most urgently. When they plead with all of you that MSU consider options for community investing, they are debating ideas. When they ask that we, as a university, take seriously the scholasticide taking place in Gaza, they are engaging in civil discourse. What they are doing is refusing to normalize institutional intellectual activity that funds a genocide. Because they can imagine and they can articulate an alternate world in which our conscience is not utterly shredded. This is how they demonstrate intellectual humility. This is how they demonstrate empathy. This is what you've asked of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Divya. Our next speaker is Eric Altman, followed by Zach Kaiser. Eric, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Eric Altman. I'm a faculty member in the psychology department here at MSU, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'll note that I'm also a council member in the city of East Lansing, and I wanted to note that the city looks forward to partnering with MSU on the P3 project at Harrison and Trowbridge. We look forward to the investment in the region, but we also urge you to consider and recognize the impact of these sorts of projects on the surrounding community over which we have jurisdiction. MSU is not an island. I also wanted to thank Sue Webster for the work of her office on MSU Vote and also for acknowledging the role of the city clerk in promoting voting access for students. None of the work on MSU Vote would be possible without the tireless efforts of the office of the city clerk. In my role as a faculty member here, I would like to urge the board to amend its policy concerning the proposal for a faculty union. We need a full and fair discussion of the pros and cons of a faculty union, and we can't have that with a gag order on management. I need to hear from my chair and my dean how they think a union will affect the functioning of their units, because that's important for my work. They have an important perspective to share, and they deserve to be heard, and we deserve to hear them. We are smart people. We are used to debating issues with competing points of view, and by and large, we are grown-ups, and we would ask to be treated as such. I would also like to ask you to allow us to vote on whether to unionize. I don't understand, frankly, why this is not already the policy. And I'm not alone in this. Voting is how we make decisions. It's how you all got elected. It's how I got elected. We all took out petitions. We had people sign them to indicate a measure of interest in our candidacy. But the petition was not the election, and neither should the card check process be the election. There are, in fact, faculty who thought that by signing a card they were indicating support for a vote because that's what they were told by the organizer. And that should, in fact, be the process. Everyone involved in this process should want an election, including the union, because that's how you get buy-in. Minority rule does not work out well in the end. So I hope you will allow this to be an open and democratic process. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Our next speaker is Zach Kaiser, followed by Sean Fauna. Zach, good morning.
What's up, everybody? I'm Zach.
I'm an associate professor in the Department of Art, Art History, and Design. But enough about me. Let's talk a little about McKinsey & Company, shall we? In May of 2023, Michael Barnett, associate professor at the Harvard School of Public Health, said that the opioid epidemic has affected the lives of practically every American. McKinsey, the management consultants responsible for advising pharmaceutical companies on the turbocharging of opioid sales, is being criminally investigated for this activity and is on the hook for $600 million in settlements. And yet, as the state news reported, McKinsey was paid $2 million by MSU's administration to consult on the future of our institution, which includes, mind you, the wonderful C.S. Mott Department of Public Health, whose researchers in 2020 were awarded a $500,000 grant from the Foundation for Opioid Response Efforts. Additionally, MSU's Office of Outreach and Engagement coordinates the Opioid Prevention and Education Network. So I see no irony in hiring McKinsey, do you? But McKinsey has always been a cancer on the American people. They have been called the single greatest legitimizer of mass layoffs, and their dogma of privatization can even be seen in their 1958 work with NASA, which promoted the use of outside contractors as opposed to building internal expertise. Sounds a lot like the demonstrable lack of investment in tenure system faculty positions, doesn't it? And McKinsey is, in no uncertain terms, committed to waging war on working people. And by working people, I mean to include all of the labor, tenure system, non-tenure system, staff, food service, infrastructure, and so on, without which this great university cannot run. So instead of actually listening to faculty on, perhaps, say, a listening tour, the administration hired the most infamous management consultancy in history. But the administration is no stranger to dubious consulting engagements, the expenditures of which dwarf the budgets of some academic units. When they got wind of our unionization effort, they hired Ogletree Deacons as their outside counsel. Ogletree is one of the first firms to make its name in union busting and helped popularize the term union avoidance. It has represented prominent companies trying to avoid worker unionization, including Amazon, IKEA, and Boeing, and has also represented right-wing reactionary legislators in gerrymandering lawsuits. In such consulting engagements made without the faculty's consent, the administration has made its position clear. It is committed to an anti-democratic and anti-labor approach to governing the very university that is, in theory, committed to educating Michigan's working class. It's not just about cut $150 million in spending, which is classic McKinsey advice for squeezing every penny out of workers while giving massive bonuses to executives. It's about the difference between the world McKinsey and Ogletree want to see realized and the world that working class Michiganders deserve. Go green.
Zach, thank you for your remarks. Our next speaker is Sean Fauna, followed by Anna Pegler-Gordon. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Sean Fauna, and I'm an associate professor of history and a member of the Union of Tenure System Faculty here at MSU. Very pleased to be here with you again. As we just heard, some faculty are now expressing concerns about a lack of open discussion and transparency in our organizing process. They call for an election to confirm the majority support that we've already established by card check. They feel their voices were not heard. UTSF regret this. We are eager to address their concerns, and we hope that, once we clear up some misunderstandings, they'll come to see how crucial a union is precisely for amplifying faculty voices. We are stronger together. At times, we've also heard MSU administration and one board member suggest that our process is not normal or somehow unfair or less democratic than the alternative. We disagree. Our process is none of those things. In some ways, it is more democratic than the alternative, and nationally, it is a growing trend. There are two paths to unionization. Both can demonstrate majority support. In a card check, the method endorsed by this board, employees vote by signing cards. Like this one, it's perfectly clear what the signatory is asking for, union representation. If a majority signs cards, the employer recognizes the union. This practice has been around since 1935. Of course, most employers have not chosen to commit themselves to neutrality toward unionization as MSU has, so they often insist on an additional step, an election overseen by an outside agency. Now, we all value elections. They're the common coin of liberal democracy, and they're a useful tool for establishing majorities. But on that score, card check is actually more democratic than an election. In a card check, a majority of all eligible employees must sign cards to authorize a union. In an election, it's only a majority of ballots actually cast. Card check sets a higher bar. It is more majoritarian. Our card campaign was also more democratic in a deeper participatory sense. Over 3 years, individual faculty engaged each other in face-to-face substantive conversations about their concerns and whether a union might help. We spoke to 1,315 colleagues this way, three-quarters of the total, often repeatedly, literally thousands of conversations. In the end, 957 faculty signed cards from every college and 92% of departments. I assure you, there has been nothing undemocratic about our process. What would be undemocratic is for MSU's leadership to continue to ignore the majority voice of its faculty. We followed this board's procedures to the letter. You said in February you would recognize us by April. It's past time now. Let's make it happen. Thank you. Go Green.
Sean, thank you for your remarks. Our next speaker is Anna Pegler-Gordon, followed by Danny Caballero. Anna, good morning.
I have taught at the James Madison College for 22 years and have worked with my colleagues to form a union of tenure system faculty for more than four. I had hoped to speak with you at the April board meeting about MSU administration stalling on recognition of the union. However, I had to leave to meet with students. Not a problem. It's 5 months later, and I get another chance to talk with you because the administration is still stalling. In November 2023, we formally asked the administration for a list of all eligible bargaining unit employees. This list would typically be provided to the union in 1 week. In December, we received an email, quote, "We are working on getting this list. It requires some manual review since tenured faculty will sometimes have interesting titles like the so-and-so endowed professor of whatever instead of simply associate professor." In December, with clear majority support, we filed for voluntary recognition of our union. As part of this process, MERC, the Michigan Employment Relations Commission, requested the list of all eligible employees by January 11th. Administration stated the university was closed, but they offered late January as an alternative, and we accepted. At meetings with administration in January, February, and March, we requested this list. We did not receive it. I mean, I know that faculty sometimes have interesting titles, but it isn't that hard to come up with a list of your employees. We finally received the list in June, 7 months after we requested it, and with far fewer people than we believe are eligible to join the union. Following the board's neutrality policy, we have proposed a reasonable unit. We have continued to work with administration to reach agreement, but they are not following. In fact, they are undermining the neutrality policy by repeatedly stalling. As just the most recent example, we met with administration 2 weeks ago. We had shared a full proposal with them. They refused to share a counterproposal, but told us the ways in which they wanted us to revise our proposal. They said that they would provide us with a list of recent hires, which is vital to our ongoing negotiation. But when we met with them 1 week later, they still had not provided this information. We received this list yesterday. In February, you publicly expressed willingness to recognize our union and stated that you hoped to do so in April. Yet, here we are. If MSU administration had followed the board's neutrality policy, we would not be here. But as recent news from the Department of Education shows, MSU administration doesn't seem to care about following policy, and it costs all of us. Thank you.
Anna, thank you for your comments. Our next speaker is Danny Caballero, followed by Ted Golden. Danny, good morning.
Good morning, folks. I'm Danny Caballero. The Lapin Phillips Foundation Professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy and in the Department of Computational Math, Science, and Engineering. I also hold an appointment in the Crate for STEM Institute, and I'm proudly starting my 12th year at Michigan State. For the last several years, I've been on the organizing committee for the Union of Tenure Stream Faculty, and I want to start with some thank yous. Thank you to the staff for setting up and organizing this meeting. Thank you for tidying up afterwards. You all run this place, and we really appreciate it. I want to thank the board for investing in me, my research communities in physics and CMSC, and my colleges. Not only does MSU have the top elementary and secondary education programs in this country, it has, it boasts the largest and most diverse community of higher education STEM researchers in the United States. We should all be very proud of that work. I also want to thank you all for the opportunity to teach the students that we admit to MSU, and I want to thank the students for choosing us. I'm sure I'm not alone in thinking that the greatest privilege in this job is walking into an MSU classroom and to meet a new group of talented, creative, and bright young people. Teaching our students is the most rewarding part of my job, and I know that many of my colleagues feel the same way. I chose MSU because it was a public research university with a clear mission for the state of Michigan. My parents have high school diplomas, and they work two jobs, and the whole time they told my sisters and I about the importance of a college education. I'm able to offer these thank yous because of the education and training that I received at three different public research universities that have equally strong commitments to their state. I believe in MSU, I believe in its mission, and I love working here. I continue to work at MSU because I believe in its core values: collaboration, equity, excellence, integrity, and respect. Myself, my colleagues, MSU staff, and our students work on this campus every day to uphold and uplift those values. We don't get it right, but we try every day. Tenure Stream faculty express those values through our research, teaching, and service, actions that undergird the mission of our public research university. Over the last year, I have consistently seen those values compromised by your chosen representatives and outside counsel who you've tasked with negotiating with the faculty. The time and energy that we could have put to pushing forward MSU's mission and the money, including my own and everyone in this room, that you have spent on outside counsel are things that neither of us will get back. Your representatives have wasted so much time and energy and money on delay tactics. They've blown past their self-imposed deadlines. They have provided us with incomplete and inaccurate information. They appear unserious and disrespectful in our meetings, and they have failed to uphold the values of this university. As you and your council know, we have a majority of faculty support, however you've tried to slice it, and that includes our librarians. So here's the deal. Let's choose a different path forward. We all want a thriving university that upholds and expresses the values of collaboration, equity, excellence, integrity, and respect. Let's collaborate on a future that envisions all of us acting with integrity and respect. Let's work towards an equitable solution so we can continue to show you our excellence. MSU is a unionized campus in a state that unions built. The sooner y'all recognize that, the sooner we can build a better MSU together. We don't need any more bad press. Take the easy win. Recognize us today. We can build something together as collaborators. Thank you for your time and attention. I truly mean that. I know it's been a long meeting.
Thank you, Danny. Our next speaker is Ted Golden, appearing via Zoom. Ted, I'm hoping for better technology luck. Yes, Ted, I can, and glad we were able to connect this meeting. I know we had some issues in June. So, Ted, please commence your remarks.
Please go to my website, www.tagolden.com, to read this speech. At a special MSU Board of Trustees meeting on March 3rd, 2024, the majority of the board voted to refer unethical trustee Banser and Deno to Governor Whitmer for Whitmer to remove Banser and Deno from the MSU Board of Trustees pursuant MCL 168. At this time, Governor Whitmer has taken no action. What did Vassar and Deno do? What harm do MSU or citizens of Michigan did the unethical behavior of Vassar and Deno cause? In April 2019, the Michigan Attorney Grievance Commission issued unethical MSU attorney Christine Moore a letter stating that she violated the Michigan Code of Professional Conduct many times in 2014 while investigating and reporting on Nasser. Her unethical conduct allowed Nasser to sexually assault patients until 2016. Unethical Moore's behavior caused profound harm to Nasser's victims and caused the taxpayers millions of dollars. The
FBI, the guy had been involved in an Astor scandal in 2015, and he worked at Astor in 2014. Trustee, why did you vote to terminate unethical Astor Dental from the board, but allowed unethical MSU attorney Moore to be promoted and continue to work for MSU? At least the FBI fired their parent agent involved with the Astor scandal. Dan Kelly, a legacy trustee and the only Republican on the board, did not get nominated to run again. I am a Democrat. I will vote for Mike Paolo, a Republican, for MSU trustee in November. Mr. Paolo wants a full independent investigation of the Astor scandal now that all of the 6,000 documents have been released. Candidate Mayday, I would like to vote for you, but I'd like you to advocate on your website that you feel that unethical attorney Moore should be released from MSU. My website, www.pagoldman.com, has more detailed information concerning the upcoming election and my past speeches to this board. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. President Guskowitz concludes public comment for today. If I can indulge quickly, I do want to thank sort of the IT communications DPPS team and my colleague Jackie Vandenbosch in the board office for setting us up in a slightly different environment today here on campus. So thanks, everyone, for all your work for that. President, over to you.
Thank you. I'll echo Secretary Fletcher's appreciation. I want to thank all of you for being here today. And with that, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.